welcome with us for this oral argument, Lancaster High School students. Would they please stand? Thank you for coming. You may be seated. And we also have Valley Christian High School students. Would they stand? And thank you all for coming. You may be seated. The students are here with us with the Court with Class program, sponsored by the State Bar of Wisconsin and this court. The high school students are invited to attend an oral argument, and if they accept the invitation, they are sent briefs and may engage in a variety of activities relating to the case we are about to hear. And as a part of this national award-winning program, the students meet after this second case with a justice of this court. And let me introduce the justices. On my far right is Justice Rogensack. You won't meet with her today. Seated next to her is Justice Patrick Crooks. Seated to my immediate right is Justice John Wilcox. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my left is Justice Anne Walsh Bradley, and to her left, Justice David Prosser, and on the far left, Justice Lewis Butler. With those introductions made, we'll call our second case for the day, 028P1056, State versus Sean D. Schulpius. Arguing on behalf of Mr. Schulpius is Ellen Hennick, Assistant State Public Defender. We'll then have Warren Weinstein, Assistant Attorney General, arguing for the State of Wisconsin for 25 minutes. In 5 minutes, Diane Welsh of the Wisconsin Department of Health and Family Services, the amicus curiae, right? Okay. Ms. Hennick, you'll have rebuttal time, too. You may proceed, Ms. Hennick.
Please, the court. My name is Ellen Hennick, and I represent the petitioner, Sean Schulpius. This court, in 2004, determined that the repeated failure of the Department of Health and Family Services to place Chapter 980 committees on supervised release in Milwaukee County when ordered raised serious constitutional and rule of law issues. Today, we're here to discuss what the implications of that are and what the remedy ought to be. This is not an easy case for judges or for anyone who's been involved in it. Unfortunately, much as the public might want at times, cases should not be tailored to fit particular individuals, and the integrity of the law depends on the court's consistent applications of the rules to everyone. All that's being asked here is that the situation in Milwaukee County be the same as it is in Washara County, in Brown County, in Outagamie County, in Marathon County, in other counties, and in Dane County, which is also a populous county. The issue is, how do we get the situation so that the statute can be followed as it should be, and people can be placed on supervised release in Milwaukee County?
Well, aren't people in Milwaukee County placed on supervised release right now? According to we received information on the last time or you were here that there are people that are out on supervised release. I understand that here, because of the this was a case because of the judge ordering supervised release, then reconsidering it, this has had an unusual flair to it. But there are people in Milwaukee County who are out on supervised release. Is that incorrect?
That, it depends on how you view being out on supervised release. Yes, there are people who have been approved for supervised release in Milwaukee County.
And there,
one of them, Robert Kearney, is still in, I'm not sure if he's in Sandridge or the Wisconsin Resource Center. I know he'd been moved back and forth. He is not placed out in the community. Billy Lee Morford is the other person. He is in a temporary placement. It is not an approved placement, as a result of which he is living under much more restrictive rules than anybody else on supervised release. Whether you want to call him out because he happens to be in a temporary placement, he virtually cannot leave, or whether you want to call him in. It's what you have, though, is no approved placement residentially within the county. In addition, you have a situation.
Excuse me. That status, as you are reporting, exists now. Has there ever been an approved supervisory release in Milwaukee County?
In 1995, there was one placement with a family member early before there was all of this brouhaha about the statute that lasted for a very brief time because the person was then discharged. That was back in 1995. Since then, there have been no placements that have been approved as to residents in Milwaukee County.
So what you're telling us is that Milwaukee County is the exception to the rule. That in, you mentioned the other counties. Obviously, you looked up where we formerly had resided before we came to the court, but I recognize that. But in those counties, there is supervised release. So Milwaukee is an exception, correct?
As far as I know, at this point, it is the only county that has had repeated failures. Whether other counties have had specific failures that are specific to one individual, I don't know.
Why is that? What's different here?
Milwaukee County would say, I'm not going to speak for the county. I believe that the difference has been that there has been a stirring up politically of the populace. There have been county officials who have been obstructionist. There has been a belief that somehow, and you see it reflected in the news articles that are in the amicus brief of the state public defender, that somehow, that if you keep resisting this long enough, there will be no one placed in Milwaukee County. And I believe that is the heart of what is going on. Certainly, the Department of Health and Family Services has attempted to identify places. Each time that has happened, there has been political pressure put on landlords who have attempted to bring those things forth. The county has refused to allow any of its county land to be used for purpose of building. There has been a court committee which was done in the Morford case by, I believe, Judge Kunich down in Milwaukee County, that attempted to identify places. Once those places were identified, they were all set, and the State Building Commission, facing pressure, did not approve the buying of those facilities. There was the Act 187 committee, which was not able to identify anything because as fast as they identified it, people pulled it back.
In fact, there was a committee set up, which we had a special master to, Judge Pike, who reported back to us.
That was the Act 187.
Right, they came to a conclusion, some of which you recited, but there also was in there that they felt that there was still an opportunity to find, I don't want to mischaracterize the report, but that's what they said, that there was there would be a facility down there in Milwaukee County.
I don't read the report that way. I read the report as saying, look, we could not identify any place. So to say on top of that, oh, but there will be a place, I'm not sure how you get from point A to point B.
And
I don't know that it's realistic to say we're going to get from point A to point B just on wishing it so. The history of this case alone suggests you're not going to get there on wishing it so. Judge Franke made multiple attempts to try and get something going in this case and was unsuccessful. Unfortunately, it appears to have been brought back to your doorstep.
Well, I do not envy you. Are you asking for this court that we that we release your client into the community?
Yes, I believe that resolution is the cleanest and the most justifiable.
What about the public safety concerns, particularly when you yourself understand that we ordered a new examination? You asked for an extension, I believe, of 90 days. Your client was then reexamined, and the result of that was that it would be dangerous to the public to release Mr. Schopius at this time?
I disagree with what the result of that was. Mr. Schopius is still on supervised release. That proceeding was not a revocation. It was simply an annual reevaluation. Those are done for people on supervised release. You do not revoke merely because a report comes back in a particular way. Having said that, however, let's assume for the moment that he is dangerous. I understand that puts this court in a very difficult position. However, what you still are facing is that the statute is unconstitutional as applied to him. The remedy for that is to not apply the statute. Now, as a practical matter, I believe that what would likely happen is that once there was a realization that this is what it's going to result in, I suspect you would see movement like you've not seen it before in Milwaukee County.
Can I stop you right there for a minute? A couple minutes ago, you said that this was now back on our doorstep. And let me give you another little approach to this. When I read the Act 187 committee report, it seemed to me that what they were doing was throwing the ball back to the legislature and saying, we've tried, we've had these problems, we think there ought to be more education, there ought to be more public forums, there ought to be further discussion, but here, legislature, is the problem. You ought to address it. So is this really at our doorstep at this point, or should we be deferring to the legislature and see what the legislature does next in regard to this problem?
The legislature has had numerous years of recognizing that there was a problem here. The legislature could have done any one of a number of things. They tried this Act 187 committee, but never has the legislature, despite all of this, said, look, we have to build. Never have they allocated monies that have been specifically to find a place and build a place. Despite the easy problems that have been very obvious to everyone along the way, the legislature has chosen not to deal with this. DFHS, under threat of contempt in this case, asked for money to be allocated. Now, that purged their contempt at that point. But was the money allocated? Were steps taken? No. That letter went into a file and nothing happened.
Why shouldn't we give the legislature the opportunity to act on their committee 187 report?
The legislature has given no indication that it will do so. I have seen nothing that suggests that they are planning on doing so. In addition, it's not like the legislature has not had 10 years to deal with this.
Wait a minute. I was just thinking there has been, and I only get this from what I read in the newspaper, and so it's not in the record, but there was at least proposed legislation that, it was that right now the law says that the county of residence has to take the person back. There was legislation or something was proposed that this would not be true, that perhaps you would be able to put people coming from Washoe County in Milwaukee and vice versa. Wasn't there that legislation? That was proposed maybe 5-6 months ago. Maybe I'm wrong.
I believe there was a proposal, but I'm not sure. If you look at the statute, there is no absolute requirement that people from Milwaukee be placed in Milwaukee.
Yeah. Now, we have...
I don't see that that's going to change anything.
And we have Sprousty out there, which is still...
Still good law.
Actually, I believe that the county was making an argument that it is not.
We'll assume that it is. But I think that the committee, which report came in, I'm going to say I read it in maybe January. I may be wrong. Not January.
July.
He wasn't. Excuse me. So when the legislature has had an opportunity to act, which is my colleague's, suggestion, but question to you, Wouldn't that be an appropriate thing? You're saying they won't act. You know that.
I am saying that based on the history, I have no real hope that they will. I understand that this court held the statute constitutional based on a belief that resources would be coming in good faith. That was 10 years ago. There have been indications of problems that have not been solved. Moreover...
But, well, the only the problem I see, and I'm, this is not meant to be argumentative, is that the one county out of all the counties really has not come forth, so to speak. So your response is that this court should release Mr. Schopius with his... with the last report, and then something would happen. And then we'd make them see, because then they would do something. That's your suggestion.
Well, I would say...
Is that responsible?
I would say more than that, and I would say yes, it is. And I'll explain in a moment. But the other part of this is that it's not just one county. The truth is that approximately... I don't know, I've seen different figures, 25 to 30% of those committed under Chapter 980 are from Milwaukee County. So to suggest that it may be one or two people out of the group is simply not
the situation. I didn't suggest, I said it was one county. I didn't say that what proportion. I'm talking about one county out of all of the state of Wisconsin.
Well, I think that there was also another, I think it's responsible for another reason. It may be somewhat, in a sense, sound backwards, but I suspect that if that were done, this county's problem would be solved, either whether the legislature, the county, they would get together and they would solve it. In addition, if you do not act in this case, the very real problem is that there is no remedy. And I'm not just talking about Mr. Schopius. I'm talking about Mr. Carney. I am talking about Mr. Morford. The reason that there is not is because for those people who've been placed on supervised release, and we saw it in the history of this case, there is no final order. There is no way to cause their cases to progress. Mr. Morford is stuck in this morass. He can't get his case to go forward. There is no other remedy, and what you are saying is we will ignore the unconstitutionality in hopes that something happens someday and leave a group of people with absolutely no remedy for it.
Counsel, I'm concerned with the approach if you don't want to, you don't have to, because I am hard-pressed to locate anyone who wants a sexual predator as a neighbor. So I'm concerned about that message, because the reality is we have a law. The reality is the constitutionality of that law is hanging on a very thin reed, a slim reed. So let me take your backup position in your reply brief. As I read it, and these are the supplemental briefs, you say, "Court, for the purpose of argument only, essentially you're saying Mr. Schopius is, if you find that he's no longer appropriate for supervised release, then you might determine, court, that the issue is moot. But despite mootness, you should go forward and deal with this case because it's of great public interest, and it has thus far kind of evaded review." So that's your backup argument, as you see. So let's pursue your backup argument. What should we do? Not with regard to your client, but with regard, even though it's moot, to how we should proceed. What's your recommendation?
There are two things you could do if you believed that it were moot and chose to go forward. One would be to say that the remedy is, in fact, release, which would provide the lower courts with their position on what they are to do, because there are certainly lower courts currently facing this position.
So when you can't find a suitable place for supervised release, you've got to release
you've
them.
You've got to release
unconditionally.
Yes, that would be one approach the court could take. The other approach the court could take, should this court decide that it's moot here, would be to consider ordering the creation of facilities. Now, I recognize, and I certainly laid out for the court, where the difficulties in doing that reside. And I recognize that there probably, in thinking about it, are two pieces to it. This court would have to go through the statute and lay out who's responsible for which pieces. I think when it came to enforcement, what I would recommend is the court do that and then remand to the trial court to deal with enforcement, because that gets you into fact-specific, who's doing what when, and I suspect a trial court is in a better position at that point to do that.
Counsel, is there another, yet a third possibility? I know you've talked in terms of unconditional release, and you've talked about creating facilities. But as I understand the statute, which this court just last term upheld on the basis of a facial attack, the statute requires supervised release. If the county is either unable or unwilling to find a location for placement, can this court fashion a remedy that would allow for release at the committee's selection, but still under supervision of the department?
I don't see anything wrong with this court making it clear that release has to be somewhere. And if that could be accommodated in another county, then I think that that would work. The problem I foresee with that kind of a remedy is going to be that we are then going to have a fight with county after county.
Maybe you misunderstand I understand that. I'm not advocating that Milwaukee export its problems. The question that I have is that the committee, let's say Mr. Schulpius, if he were an appropriate candidate, might have a location where he might wish to live. And would it be inappropriate for this court, since the goal is supervision by the department, to say, okay, if the department doesn't have a place, he has a place, department, you have to supervise him at that location?
I would have no problem with that. I will tell you, however, that in practice, supervision has consisted of a whole list of things that dictate where somebody can live. Now, whether that could be accommodated in a place that, for example, Mr. Schulpius might be able to live. I mean, if you set your conditions in such a way that there is only one house in the entire county that will need it, I'm not sure that you get there. But in theory, I think you could do that.
Counsel, I also have a question about the record. We remanded this matter, as I understand it, for updated examination and determination by the trial court. And I know that we've been provided with what appears to be a waiver of petition for discharge and a docket sheet of what occurred in the circuit court. Are you aware of whether the court has been provided with copies of the trial court's determination, any transcripts, and the actual report?
I don't have the transcripts of that. They apparently were not provided. My understanding, I am aware what happened in the trial court. What happened in the trial court was that there were some evaluations done. There was no petition for supervised release, so that portion of it was not dealt with by the court. It was within the evaluation, but it was not dealt with by the court. All that was dealt with, what they were left in front of them, was what would have been an automatic petition for discharge under the statute, which was then waived, so there was no actual determination at that point.
Well, I asked the question because when I look at the docket sheet, and I'm reading from the docket sheet, that's all we have, defense counsel advises the court that the doctor report does not support the petition for supervised release. Therefore, defense counsel notes that the petitioner is waiving his right to petition for discharge, and we'll submit the signed and written waiver at the next court date. I look at the written waiver for discharge, and it speaks solely of discharge.
doesn't speak in terms of the supervised release. And so my concern is the adequacy of the record that we had before us in trying to make our determination as to whether or not this case may or may not be moot, as to whether or not Mr. Shelpius has been deprived of any constitutional rights. You understand?
I understand.
I don't think we have everything that we sent it back for.
And you may very well not. I was not even aware of what exactly you had. I can tell you that I believe that docket entry is incorrect based on what I know, that there was no petition for supervised release, that may be the misunderstanding of the clerk. I would not have any problem with this court suggesting that the rest of the record ought to come up, obviously.
Where does that put us? No petition for supervised release. The court ordered an examination. The examination apparently shows that he's still in need of institutionalization treatment. And that you're not going to, and that it's agreed, he agrees that he shouldn't be discharged without condition. Okay.
Right.
What does that do? Where does that leave the court? It's another way of stating Justice Butler's.
I believe that where it leaves the court is because an evaluation itself cannot revoke supervised release. Our position has been from the beginning that lack of a better word, I'm going to call the reconsideration of supervised release was improper. That at the moment, that leaves Mr. Shelpius on supervised release.
Counselor, I have a question about that last statement that you made, because in November of 1999, after the motion for reconsideration, the trial court did determine that it erred when it ordered supervised release, and in fact, he should not be released. But through all of these proceedings, that order is ignored, yet it was never appealed. And I can understand why you might think it was improper, but when you have an order that you think is erroneous, the remedy is to appeal. So we have an unappealed order, which is the last order on Mr. Shelpius, that says he's too dangerous to release. Why is it, aside from the global problem, which I can certainly appreciate, but why is it in regard to Mr. Shelpius that you keep going back to the October order rather than the November unappealed order?
Okay. I believe that we did, in fact, appeal that order. And I'll tell you what happened. Because of the posture of this case, it was not clear what was final and what was not final initially. There was I do not believe, Justice Rogenczyk, that you were on the court when this first came up in 2000. As we were preparing for oral argument, the court suddenly raised that order, that reconsideration. When we went back to the trial court, I believe that because of the line in that order, that's at the very end of that order, I'm sorry, my light is on.
Yeah, please finish.
That it was subject to the earlier order. And there was some confusion about how the reconsideration and this order could be subject to each other.
Well,
I believed none of it was final. What we did then was to take and try and get a final order. And that was then appealed. And I have taken the position that because that was not a final order, the final order was, I'm telling you, and I had the trial court, which order takes precedent. We then appealed that order, and it brought it all up.
So both orders are here.
So it brings both orders up. Because the real final order is the order saying, when we went back to that trial court and said, okay, I've got two orders, they seem to be in conflict, neither of them seems to be final, what's the final order? And the final order was, I'm enforcing that one. In other words, the reconsideration, which then made the whole thing final, and we brought that up.
Now,
thank you.
Interjecting myself, and I'm just looking at my notes here, because I was here, and that the circuit court ordered that Shelpius be committed, this is in 99, to an institutional care pursuant to 980.06. However, the court made its decision subject to the decision and order requiring release entered in the case on October 27, 1999, and I have that Shelpius did not appeal from that order. That's my understanding.
Right.
No. You're saying no.
I'm saying that he couldn't have appealed from that order because it was not a final order because of the subject to language. So what we did is we went back to the trial court and said, we've got these two things. We don't seem to have a final order. What the heck is going on here? Please give us an order that's clear. The court did that. Therefore, in appealing the order that made it clear what the trial court considered to be the order that was final and precedent, that brought the whole thing up.
It brought all intermediate orders, all things that the court did are now before the court because you appealed a final order. That is your position.
Yes.
Okay, and so if the November 1999 order was a valid order, then there is no outstanding right for supervised release, correct? And you're saying that's before us to determine today as well?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. That straightens it out a lot for me.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Weinstein?
Thank you, ma'am. Please, the court. I'm Warren Weinstein, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state of Wisconsin. Needless to say, I disagree that Mr. Schulpius is on supervised release. As I see it, even though the November order may have been inconsistent with the October order, and even though the circuit court may have wanted his order of commitment to be subject to an order of release, that's not physically possible. And hence, the November 1999 order resolved the entire litigation between all of the parties. Now, there was one concern about that, and that is these judicial forms that require the court, the circuit court, to use them and to not alter them. And when Judge Franke issued his decision, he said that his November order would be subject to an entry of that particular form. When he looked at the form a month later, or in the interim, he determined that that form was inappropriate, and since he could not modify it, he was not going to enter it, and he notified the parties of that in December. In my view, the 90 days for appeal of that November order began to run in December, when Judge Franke indicated that he was not going to enter any further order and that he intended the November order to be a final order or to resolve the litigation between all of the parties. Okay. He never referred to it as a final order.
You've been here a long time on this case, and I'm trying to survive. I'm trying to pull something out from the back of my head, and that is, of course, we were all ready for oral argument when Judge Franke issued this order for reconsideration. And I recall we've had some discussion regarding the subject to language and what's the consequence, what does it mean. Do you recall if on that day, when it was initially scheduled for oral argument, because of the 11th and a half hour order, which changed course of things, that we all showed up and still had a discussion in open court on the record as to what does Judge Franke's order mean, what does the subject to language mean, and where do we go from here? Do we proceed with oral arguments or not? Do you recall?
My recollection is that the first argument, which is the one that you're referring to, we had not seen the order or any of the record in support of it, and that what we ended up arguing in that case was whether I thought this, that we were here on a permissive appeal, and it was a state's permissive appeal, and I filed a notice of voluntary dismissal, which, of course, in this court is discretionary with the court, and what we argued was whether or not the court should dismiss the case in terms of in the face of Judge Franke's most recent order. But I have not seen it, I know.
But there is some place where we have heard argument on what does this mean. Does this mean it's tying back to the order?
My recollection is that was last term.
Okay.
There was discussion about this order last term when we argued it. And as I recall, some members of the court said, well, how can you make an order subject to a further order when their result is diametrically opposite? And I don't know the answer to that question. I don't think you can, and I think the most recent order takes precedence.
Did something come up before the Building Commission?
Before that 187 Commission, you mean?
No, the State Building Commission.
Oh, yes, but not in this case. It was in one of the other Milwaukee County cases. My recollection, it was in Mr. Morford's case. But, yes, there was a proposal. I haven't seen the record on this, so I'm not totally sure that this is accurate. But it's my recollection that there was a private owner who was willing to convey land to the state for the purpose of building a halfway house. And that required Building Commission approval. For whatever reason, and I have no idea, the Building Commission did not make a quick decision about it. And in the interim, there was public pressure applied to the private owner who withdrew the offer to convey. That's my recollection. And my understanding was that the property, while it was specifically generated in the Morford litigation and was to cover Mr. Morford, was sufficient to provide some housing for other persons under the Act also. But I don't know that it was ever specifically designated. I know it wasn't specifically designated for Mr. Shopius because the state has treated the most recent order as a November order, which is a commitment order. It may have been for one of the other people in Milwaukee County besides Mr. Morford.
Mr. Weinstein, I assume you agree that if Mr. Shopius was under a release order, supervised release order, and if he was retained for 3 or 4 years under in an institution because they couldn't find the appropriate quarters, that under those circumstances there is a question whether the statute, his rights under the statute, are being recognized and enforced by the state.
I don't think that it raises a constitutional problem.
What about a violation of the statute in that when the state does not adhere to a statute, then in and of itself is a constitutional issue?
Well, I would disagree with the last statement, but it would be...
State's violating the statute.
The statute would not be carried out. I mean, the problem with the word violation is that it kind of places a culpability factor on the department. And it's clear from this litigation and from every other report that the problem here is not with the department.
Which department?
Department of Health and Family Services.
Okay.
And frankly, I've not seen anything in these cases to indicate that the Human Services Department in Milwaukee County has not been cooperative. It appears to me that the problem is that because there's no... Now, one can say other things about other officials in Milwaukee County, but the problem is that there doesn't exist any public placement currently because all of the halfway houses in Milwaukee County are under the auspices of the Department of Corrections, or I don't know if Milwaukee County has any of its own or not, but the private sector is particularly subject to these pressures from politicians and the community and the news media. And as a result, people who may at one time be willing to provide private placement, sooner or later, change their mind.
Well, hasn't there also been public statements made by county officials that county land will not be used?
That was the county executive, as I recall, yes. That was in connection with the Act 187 report, yes.
Let's just go back. The state is not able to give, assuming Mr. Shopius was authorized to be released under supervised release, that's a big assumption, but let's assume it. The state has not been able to comply with the statute, regardless of the reason. He has not been given the rights that the statute says he has. Is that right?
Well, I would say in this case, no, because in my view, if we want to be constructionist about this, the supervised release order was an error to begin with, and it's never contested.
I accept that as your position. I'm saying, assuming he was under an order for supervised release, and 3 or 4 years pass, and he is not released, he has not gotten his rights under the statute.
He did.
Right?
For that period of time, yes.
All right. What should be done about it? Does the state just ignore the statute and throw up its hands and say, can't do anything?
No, I don't think so. I think it's incumbent on the circuit judge, through the authority given in Sprosty, to formulate an appropriate remedy. Now, perhaps that means going outside of the county, which the statute gives the circuit court authority to do.
And go outside the county is one remedy. What's another remedy that the circuit court can do?
It is, it can order, again, here the problem that I have with this, in a theoretical way, you can say the circuit court can order a facility to be created, and Sprosty says that the DHFS and the county can be ordered to create a facility. The problem that you have with that, at least in Milwaukee County, is that the people who are causing the inability to place are not the people before the court. And so you have a problem in the normal course of the way the judiciary works, to how do you get those people before the court so that you can do something about it.
Doesn't the county have the right of condemnation? Doesn't the state have the right of condemnation?
DHFS in Chapter 32 is mentioned as having condemnation power. To my knowledge, it's never been used.
And what about the county?
I'm sorry, the county?
Yes.
I don't really know if Milwaukee County has condemnation power or not.
What I'm trying to do is
view
towards the issue. Maybe this is moot. Maybe you're absolutely right about that there was an order that he was not eligible for supervisory release. But the question is, if it's moot, should we deal with the issue of what happens in any county that there is no facility, for whatever reason, for a supervised release? Now, do you think the court ought to face up to that issue?
Well, I guess I always thought Sprosty did that. Milwaukee may be proving me wrong about that. But
do you think that the circuit court now has the power to give a remedy to a person who is authorized for supervised release?
It seems to me, Sprosty says, for appropriate cases, that the circuit court has the authority to order DHFS and the county in partnership to create whatever facilities or treatment, if that's the problem, although that's never been a problem that I'm aware of, that are necessary. And it seems to me that the circuit court has the power to fashion a remedy appropriate.
Okay, that isn't working.
It hasn't worked.
Exhibit A.
That's right.
So this is your opportunity. Let's say, for argument purposes, the court is going to try to save the constitutionality of this statute and take action. This is your chance, your moment in the sun. Tell us what we should do. What we can't do, what hasn't been working. Tell us what we should do.
I guess before I address the question directly, I do not believe the inability to place this person in Milwaukee County makes the statute unconstitutional.
Okay.
Setting that aside.
You have done a superb job as an advocate telling us what, What won't work? What if I get?
In
tell
a specific
us what we should
case,
do if we're going to do something. What's the best thing for us to do?
In a specific case, I think the circuit court has to be brave enough, if you will.
Mm-hmm. That's not the, that's not answering my question. So I want you to be brave enough to answer my question.
I don't,
because that
I guess
work.
I don't understand your question.
My question is, what should we do? Because I started my question with the premise that it hasn't worked. And you agreed, it hasn't worked. Sprosty hasn't worked. So tell us what to do that can work.
Well, I don't think you can do anything in this particular case because of Schopius's dangerousness.
Maybe if, with regard to mootness, what can you do?
If we were here on someone who everybody agreed was appropriate for supervised release, I think the thing to do would be to remand the case to the circuit court with directions to fashion a remedy under Sprosty. And I think that's the appropriate approach.
Other than Sprosty, you have no recommendation. You are silent as to what we should do other than Sprosty. Is that what I'm hearing you? Is that what I'm hearing your voice say?
I wouldn't say I'm silent. I do not believe there's a constitutional violation here. And I don't think it would, you can fairly strike down the statute on a constitutional claim.
Okay. And I understand that argument.
Well.
But, and maybe, let me try one more time, then I will abandon my efforts. Assuming there is, you know, give me all these assumptions. Give me your best recommendation as an officer of the court.
And my best recommendation for this case is to remand it. I think this problem is a political problem, and I do not think the judiciary can solve it. That's my officer of the court statement to you. I think the solution has got to come from across the street or from the other side of the building.
Well, counsel, I want to follow up on that, because if you think that the court cannot solve the problem, and recognizing that the statute is written is perfectly valid, this court has said so on more than one occasion.
And it works in every county.
In every county other than Milwaukee is what you're arguing. If we have a situation in Milwaukee where the county is either unable or unwilling to follow the statute, then how can this court, in an appropriate case, uphold the statute as applied?
Well, again, I quibble about the grounds being constitutional, but I think in an appropriate case that the circuit court can order supervised release to...
There's no plan because there's no place to put it.
You get a plan for everything but housing, and that normally includes the heightened probation and parole type sex offender supervision, and it includes treatment, medications if they're appropriate, things like that. And if really in an individual situation, I mean, the guy's going to have to find a place to live somehow, on his own maybe,
and then
the court approves it.
All right, so the committee comes up with a place. Is it your position that the court is then obligated, if the department cannot find a place, to approve the committee's proposed location? Is that the state's position?
If that's the only possibility, and the court has exhausted all other possibilities of obtaining one, then I think maybe that's true. And I do know that in past cases, the department has accepted the placement that either the attorney or the individual has on their own obtained or set up. Now, certainly the court scrutinizes that and should, in this case too, to determine whether or not there are sufficient safeguards with all of the other things that are in place, like supervision and GPS or whatever might be available, to minimize the risk. But it seems to me that in an appropriate case, which this is not one, that is certainly within the circuit court's authority.
So if the circuit court then, let's say the committee comes in and says, all right, well, the department doesn't have a place for me, but my sister lives on 83rd and Bleak. and I want to go live with my sister. And as long as the department comes in with a plan that meets all of the criteria that are set forth with the statute, it would be the state's position that there would be nothing inappropriate about placing that individual at 83rd and Fleet with the committee system. Is that correct?
So long as the circuit court is satisfied that both the county and DHFS have really exhausted any other placements, and so long as the circuit court puts in place what it believes to be sufficient safeguards for that individual's placement at that particular location, then yeah, I think it would be. And frankly, I think that's what's happened in Mr. Marford's case. I know Mr. Marford doesn't like the restrictions that have been placed on him, but frankly, what the circuit court did was say, you're here, and to be safe, here are the restrictions I think need to be in place, and it seems to me that's exactly what supervised release contemplates.
Would you agree that the statute that is constitutionally okay on its face is only constitutional if it is applied as the statute is contemplated? In other words, there is no procedure for maintaining custody of these individuals unless the statute is followed. Is that correct?
I hesitate because I don't think that any of this calls into question the commitment, which depends only on dangerousness and mental disorder.
The original commitment.
And there's no case that I'm aware of that establishes that supervised release is required to make the statute constitutional. So that's my hesitation. I think certainly that is what the statute envisions, and I think certainly the circuit court has authority to accomplish that. I don't think the failure necessarily means that the statute falls on constitutional grounds. It may require some remedy for statutory problems, but I think the circuit court has sufficient authority to deal with those. But yeah, I think in the end that the statute requires supervised release under certain findings of the circuit court. The circuit court makes those findings, and they're essentially either agreed to by everybody or tested on appeal and found to be correct, that the circuit court is required to fashion and create whatever it takes to put that person on supervised release. And that may mean some extraordinary kinds of supervision based on a living placement that the SVP person comes up with.
Can I ask you, what is the responsibility of the county government in Milwaukee County under Chapter 980?
It's not mentioned directly. The only responsibility that the county has under the statute is through its Department of Health and Family Service. I'm not even sure what they call them at the county level, but it's the 51 board, or that administrative agency that administers 51, and those are the people that the statute refers to as being responsible, and it's a cooperative or a partnership, it seems to me, with DHFS.
Well, does any part of the Milwaukee County government have a legal responsibility to provide facilities for 980 committees?
Not directly.
There's been some reference to excluding county-owned property for a facility. Do you have any idea how much property Milwaukee County owns in Milwaukee County?
I haven't got any idea. And I suppose the legislature certainly could require the county to use a specific parcel or any parcel, I guess. I'm not sure. I think in a specific case and under the right facts, the circuit court might be able to order that, because at least they have the county department before them.
Well, let me ask this. Does the state of Wisconsin own any property in Milwaukee County?
Other than the university, I'm not sure. There is a secure facility in Milwaukee County. I believe that's state-owned, but I'm not positive. But, of course, that wouldn't – it's a secure facility, so it wouldn't work for supervised release.
But would – I mean, logically, if the state of Wisconsin owned property in Milwaukee County, wouldn't that be more natural to look to that property than to county property?
It might, yeah. Again, I think that that's probably something that the legislature I view that as being in the legislature's bailiwick, and it's something that may well be appropriate for the county or for the legislature to do.
The building commission is not really a creature of the legislature.
No, it isn't. It's a combined sort of thing with the executive also being a part of it.
Council, under 980.07, sub 5, I think that's what you're referring to when you say the county under its 51 board has involvement in coming up with a plan. It states the department, the statute sub 5 reads, from the beginning, if the court finds that a person is appropriate for supervised release, the court shall notify the department. The department and the county department under 5142 and the county of residence of the person shall prepare a plan that identifies the treatment and services of any that the person will receive in the community. The plan shall address the person's needs for supervision, counseling, medication, vocational services, etc. So that's the authority in terms of the county's involvement, that the court will order that the county, along with the department, shall prepare a plan. So that seems to be a joint responsibility here.
That's right.
And Council, there's no requirement.
I see my time is up, and I haven't given my 5 minutes yet.
Well, yeah, that was a.
I do want to very quickly address one thing that Justice Butler raised, which was the procedure under the annual re-exam under 07. It's my view of the statutes that that does not bring up any supervised release issues in the absence of a petition, either from the committed person or the head of the facility. Both of them have the authority to petition for supervised release. But the only issues that arise under 07 are discharge.
And I have one last question, if I might, Chief.
Ahead, Justice Butler.
Under sub 5, the statute that Justice Bradley was just reading from, the second sentence says, the department shall make its best effort to arrange for placement of the person in a residential facility or dwelling that is in the person's county of residence. There's no requirement, is there, that a county provide or a state or whatever a residential facility as long as a dwelling is available. Is that correct?
That's correct. And in fact, the statute seems to have a preference for private placement because of the previous, I think it's the previous sentence that says the department has authority to contract with private providers.
Thank you.
So it is the Department of Justice's position, if I understand it, that should the court hold in the department's favor that Mr. Shopius has no right to supervised release, but views this issue of providing supervised release as a continuing problem, moot though in this case, that this matter should be returned to the circuit court for the circuit court to determine a remedy for those people that who might in the future be in the position of needing supervised release in Milwaukee. So that's the state's position. And the circuit court can do one of two things, if I understood it. It can order that Milwaukee residents or former residents be placed outside the county, or it can order a facility to be created, and then it would have to go to look to the DHFS and the county under 51, Chapter 51, for such a facility. Is that your position?
It's not my position that you should remand this case to the circuit court for anything.
I understand that.
But in a general way, I think that it's accurate that that's the way we view the statute as operating for a person who is appropriate for supervised release.
In a general way, you also suggested that the problem is across the hall. Would it be appropriate if the court is looking for solutions to, and I know I said this report came out in January, meant July, in legislative time, sometimes they move fast, sometimes they move slow, but that would, we'll assume regular time. Would it also be appropriate for this court to give the legislature time to perhaps analyze that report and come up with new solutions, if there are any, for finding suitable locations in this one county, Milwaukee County?
I think that would be appropriate, yes.
Counsel, isn't the recitation that the chief gave to you putting us in the position of making an advisory decision if we determine that this man has no right to supervised release?
I think it is, but
when the circuit court decides what the terms and conditions are of supervised release, they're particularized to the person before the court and that person's needs and the risk to the community and so forth, correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
And it's my view that's why Sprosty is sufficient authority for future cases.
Right. Anytime we deal with a moot case, it's an advisory opinion.
That's right.
Ms. Walsh, now you submit, Ms. Walsh representing the Department of Health, and since you keep changing your name.
Department of Health and Family Services.
Family Services. What is the last brief you filed with the court? Dated. Is it the December brief? Because I noticed in the brief that I've been looking at, filed by Neil Gebhardt.
The last review was dated April 1st, 2005.
Okay. I have a copy. You've got a brief?
Okay. I have a copy available if anyone wants it. The ultimate recommendation by our independent psychologist was that the court not consider Mr. Schulpius for supervised release or discharge at this time.
Right.
Should I leave that with the court?
Yes. I don't know if the other members of the court have it. I do not have that. Because there is a reference in your brief that's dated, let's see if I can find that, December 20, 2004. It says, if the committee, and this is a reference to, I think, the Chapter 187 committee in Milwaukee County, is unable to fulfill its statutory obligations, the issue of appropriate remedies may need to be reexamined at that time. The DHFS respectfully requests the opportunity to file an additional amicus brief on matters addressed in this question after February 15, 2004.
We did not follow up on a request to file an additional brief. We've instead made a request to appear at arguments so that hopefully we could address that issue here today.
Good. Now, does Ms. Hennick have a copy, Mr. Weinstein, have a copy of the brief that you just referred to?
I'm sorry, I misunderstood. That was our 980 evaluation,
okay,
not a brief.
That's fine. Good. Okay.
And then I do have...
Do they each have a copy of that? Mr. Weinstein is saying yes. Okay. Fine. Ms. Hennick indicates yes.
All right.
I proceed.
All right. And so in following up on that point specifically...
Remedies? What point are you following up on?
I'll start where you'd like, either on the failure of the Act 187 committee to find recommendations for a site and what we hope to do about that,
okay,
or what actions this court may take going forward in this case.
Both would be appreciated.
Okay. All right. I'll start on the more general question of what this court may do. You know, if there is a case where the statute is not being followed and a person is not being placed on supervised release by the circuit court, there are a number of remedies available or tools available at the circuit court level. Perhaps this court can use its supervisory authorities to remind the circuit courts and the parties what those are, even if moot in this case. For instance, the Sprosty order is available. A Sprosty order was made to Milwaukee County in this case to develop a plan and create facilities if needed. Contempt proceedings were initiated by Mr. Schulpius, but then later adjourned by Mr. Schulpius as to why Milwaukee County wasn't taking action there. Perhaps that would have been a proper path to follow to get relief. In addition, you know, I think there's a variety of options that would lead to injunctive relief. I think a mandamus order. I think contempt proceedings are appropriate at times.
To whom would the mandamus be directed? Your department?
There's a two-part proceeding, the court needs to make two orders in order for someone to be on supervised release. First, the court determines the person's appropriate and orders the department or county to prepare a plan, and then the court must approve the plan and then order supervised release. In many of these cases, the department files a plan or multiple plans with the court, and the court is not approving the plan. So a mandamus action may be appropriate against the department or county if it is failing to submit any plans. Pursuing a supervisory writ may be available if the circuit court is abusing its discretion in failing to approve a valid plan. So I think we need to look at all of the parties involved. Contempt proceedings may be appropriate if the county or department is truly failing to honor court orders. But as was found in this case, you know, the department made diligent efforts to try to find a residential placement for Mr. Schulpius. Part of the reason were, you know, political pressures that exist in Milwaukee County, but also Mr. Schulpius' own circumstances precluded the department from being successful in finding a placement. This is a person who offended while in a halfway house. I don't know that we can fault the Milwaukee halfway houses for refusing to take him. You know, he presented too big of a risk. But I think there are a variety of tools available. May I proceed, Chief?
Yes.
To a respondent or to the circuit court if the statutory rights of the respondent are being delayed, withheld, or denied. And I don't think, I agree with the Assistant Attorney General that it rises to a constitutional level, except in a, you know, theoretical rare case that we've not yet seen. So I don't think we need to reach that question today. In terms of the department is continuing to seek both a site for a transitional facility in Milwaukee. The Building Commission has authorized us, has appropriated funds so that we can purchase land and build a site in Milwaukee. We are disappointed that the Act 2087 committee, which was made up all of Milwaukee residents,
failed. Now, that's the 12-person site for a room for 12. Is that a problem when you have, right here, you're dealing with one person? And doesn't that compound the problem when you're saying, well, we want a site for 12?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it does make it politically more challenging to find a community or a neighborhood that's willing to have that facility in its borders. And that's the challenge that the Act 2087 committee found. And since the allocation of those funds and the authorization for the department to build it, we've been trying to work with the communities in Milwaukee to identify a site. Initially, a consultant was hired, and that consultant worked through May of 2003 in an effort to try to build community support and identify a location.
Is that going on right now?
That was ended in May of 2003. Then individual department officials and staff went out looking for property, trying to work with realtors, trying to identify locations. When the legislature created Act 187 and that committee, we devoted our efforts, deployed our staff to help that committee. You know, we did a request for proposal to try to find realtors in Milwaukee who would help us. But we received no offers for help, save one realtor who offered us property that ultimately was rejected.
What is the amount of funds that has been authorized by the State Building Committee?
It's about $1.3 million. And that was a few years ago. We could go back and ask for an increase in that appropriation.
Well, would that buy land and a facility?
At the time, it was envisioned that would buy land and facility and build a facility. But in the meantime, we are also, in each and every case, trying to find individual residential placements for individuals whom the court has identified as appropriate for supervised release. And that was the earlier building commission question that came up. There was a house in Oak Creek that we sought permission to buy for Mr. Morford and hoped to also use it for Mr. Carney. And so that was one that we had hoped to be able to secure as not a big group home, but a small group home for persons on supervised release. And the realtor or seller withdrew the offer to purchase while we were awaiting an attorney general opinion, while the building commission sought an opinion by the attorney general to see if the circuit court order in Mr. Morford's case required them to purchase the land. The attorney general didn't want to issue an advisory opinion there, and in the meantime, the offer to purchase was withdrawn. So, again, that's an effort that demonstrates the department continues to try to find placements for all of these individuals. For
other than what you've discussed, what are there actually supervised placements in Milwaukee County? What's out there?
What's out there now?
You've got Morford, you've got Carney. Is that it?
There's a recent case that was remanded with Mr. Brown that is currently in just, I think, I'm not sure where it is on remand, if it's back in the circuit court or in the process of getting there. And it was a court of appeals decision overturning a circuit court decision not to grant him supervised release. And so we'll be dealing with that. And then, and Mr. Morford, our plan for his placement was approved, and he was placed in 2003. Subsequent to approving the plan, the circuit court decided to make it a temporary placement. But again, so there are actions of the circuit court in addition to actions of the department that I think need to be examined in individual cases. You know, I don't know if you want me to discuss the facts of Mr. Carney, but the current order there is that we find hospice care for him in Milwaukee. And the hospice providers in Milwaukee are telling us that he doesn't meet the criteria for hospice care. So,
is any state land being considered?
It's not going to be in the record here or in public records, but from my own experience, I know that we looked at that. But the land the state owns, it owns for specific purposes, like the Department of Transportation owns quite a bit of land in Milwaukee, but it's because it's useful for roads, you know, highways. It's not land that would be appropriately transferred to us for a facility. DNR owns land, the university owns land, but the land, you know, we have a state office building, but the lands owned are for specific purposes.
Are these vacant lands? In other words, you're saying that the DOT owns land?
Most of DOT's land would be vacant or determined to be vacant.
Why would that not be suitable for building a facility?
We could look at the specific parcels. At the time we looked at it, it was mostly, you know, land running along the Marquette Interchange and the interstate. And, again, they're parcels of land that we're using for freeway construction and ditches and, I mean, the other things that go along with having a highway. Well, we did examine that as a department but didn't find that to be appropriate.
Let me ask this. You say that the land owned by the state is owned for specific purposes. Is the land owned by the county owned just because we want land, or is it owned for specific purposes?
I don't know what land Milwaukee County owns. I know some of the facilities they own and some of the parks and things they own, but so I think that's probably generally true for most of their properties. I don't know if they have vacant land that has ended up with them as ownership. I guess I have to think that they're, based on the Act 187 committee experience, that there's some land that appears to be not serving a purpose. And so I don't know why they own it, but I can't speak for Milwaukee County. I mean, but there were some parcels identified as potentially good sites for a facility that do not appear to be serving a different purpose in Milwaukee County. But I have not researched that. I respectfully request that this department uphold this court uphold the decision below and not find that in this particular case the Department of Health and Family Services has done anything to unlawfully maintain custody of Mr. Schulpius. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Hennick, you've got 5 minutes in rebuttal.
couple of points that may be peripheral where I do, in fact, know the answer, and I know Mr. Weinstein did not. This court did see at least the letter order from Judge Franke back in December of 2000, and I know that they did because I know that it was attached to things that we were faxing back and forth. There was a lot of faxing going on the day before. I recall the discussion of subject to being at that, and I know that at that oral argument I had the trial attorney, Tom Wilmoth, who had the documents. So I know that they were available then. I'm not sure how much that matters. As for the idea of you find a place and we'll just set you, there's been some allusions to the fact that that may have been what happened with Mr. Morford. In fact, it's not. There was a place identified and then the permission to be there, in essence, was withdrawn except as a temporary placement. The practical problem in that case, and I'm well aware of it for several reasons, including I happen to represent Mr. Morford as to part of his case, is that the restrictions he is under because the court is uncomfortable. He is the only person under supervised release, as far as I know, whose conditions must be approved by both the district attorney and the court. The fact that the department considers the conditions adequate is not sufficient in that case. And several of the things that the department has asked happen have not happened. So what happens as a practical matter is that everything is coming back in front of the court, and he is not treated as other people on supervised release because there is discomfort with where he is living. And I think you would have to deal with that problem. I'm going to go ahead, unless there are questions, and sit down because my voice isn't going to make it through.
Are there any questions, Ms. Henning? Hearing none, Ms. Henning, thank you for your presentation on, what is this, your third appearance on this case? Or second? Second. Second officially, the third. And you too, Mr. Weinstein, and we appreciate Ms. Welsh coming from the Department of Health and Family Services, which the court requested that they might want to appear. Case. And you've all done an interesting and good job in advising the court. That concludes our hearing in 02-AP-1056 State versus Schulpius. The court is in recess until 1:30. The students should remain if they are scheduled to do so. They're in recess.